Oh, hello.
Hello.
And welcome to the New York Mystery Machine.
Tamina Hall, but far the ghosts.
Oh, but far the
ghosts. But far the ghosts.
But far the ghosts. Hey, Christina.
Hello. How are you?
Oh, God, we're doing this whole time?
the whole episode is going to be like this.
Oh, boy. Is this a good accent, Sam?
No, this is a bad one. I used to be able to do a really great one. I used to be able to do a great Irish accent that was good enough that I tricked... friends.
Who? Who
it was a friend of a friend. We were teenagers.
Who's hard of
quiet.
Hearing. I tricked a friend of a friend who couldn't hear well.
And we were teenagers. It's fine.
But
he was from Ireland. He was from Ireland. Or he was stupid. And just playing along. But he was from Ireland.
Okay.
Anyway, this has gone off the rails.
I feel like the beginnings of our episodes have gotten really weird.
They have.
When I listened back to like season one, it was like very like, brah, brah, brah. Now it's just like. Oh my God. Well, welcome to the old podcast, everyone. We're rolling along here at the end of November.
I'm still laughing at you asking Sam if that's a good ask.
That's a callback we call in the biz.
Yeah.
From last week when I stated that Sam, dear friend of us and friend of the show, said that I don't do accents
well. And they're still salty about it.
And someone is still salty about it. At this whole long 7 days removed.
Right, this whole seven days betwixt last episode and this one.
Oh my God. You know. I don't think I have any accents in this story today, so we're good to go. Worry not.
Sounds like you're going to have to throw one in there just for fun.
I'll throw in Casey Kasem.
Casey Kasem.
The Casey Kasem is good, no?
I like Casey Kasem.
I don't know. Maybe it's not good. I don't really know. I can't tell.
I actually don't know what Casey Kasem sounds like. So
it's Casey Kasem here on American Top 40. Oh, my gosh. How are you doing, Christina? Did I ask this already?
I think that's when I went into the Irish accent. So.
Oh, the Irish accent.
Yeah.
I
we're so sorry to the people of Ireland.
So sorry. Do we have people? We do have people listening in Ireland.
I really apologize.
I think it's like a barely a percent.
We just lost it. We just lost it.
I mean, we had people who listen in Ireland. You guys, we're so excited. We are rolling right along as we jump into ye olde Christmas season, which is just around the corner. Last week was Thanksgiving, and now we're heading over to the Christmas season. We have some fun stuff planned for our little December episodes, working on some cool.
We didn't wish anyone happy Thanksgiving last episode. It's fine.
I didn't want to. Oh. I didn't feel like it. All right. I forgot. I forgot when these take place because it wasn't a Thanksgiving-centric episode for the first time.
They're getting harder to.
Yeah, it's getting harder to get holiday-specific episodes. We do our best, but you know, not a lot of people have been murdered on Thanksgiving, it turns out.
Gotta start turning to Groundhog Day, things like that. Flag Day!
A murder on Flag Day! If you're listening to this on the day we release it, which is November 27th, you still have until 1 p.m. Eastern to jump in our Black Friday sale at belowthecollar.com/NYMysteryMachine. You get 20% off our t-shirts using the code BF2023. Once again, if you're listening to this this morning when we dropped it, we dropped these at 5 a.m. You have until 1 p.m. today. And if not, you missed it. But we still have t-shirts on the website. They make great stocking stuffers. They'll be there until January 1st. After January 1st, they will no longer be there. We'll have a new home for our t-shirts and for our stickers and for all the fun stuff we're trying to develop for the show. So more information on that later if you're interested. Another great thing you can get someone for the holidays is a subscription to our Patreon.
Ooh.
For just at least $3 a month. And if you want, you can pay, I'm almost positive you can pay for a full year up front if
wow.
you do want to give the gift of the New York Mystery Machine Patreon
who
to someone.
Who doesn't want that as their gift?
I mean, there are so many people who don't. Can you imagine, Christina, if you're someone who's never listened to our show and someone's like, here, this Patreon. What will I get? Some more of these lunatics talking about like crazy shit. I think they talked about like fucking alligators in the sewer and like vortexes. So yeah, but you can give the gift of Patreon for as little as $3 a month. You get you get to join the community for as little as $5. You get a free Patreon exclusive every month, and those Patreon exclusives get delivered right on the Spotify. We're fancy these days.
We're fancy.
And spancy.
Spancy. That's when you're fancy on Spotify. You're spancy.
You are spancy. All right. Well, let's I guess we'll just get into it.
Let's do it. What are we doing today, Adam?
Today, as the title of the show stated.
Is that a jab at how my titles don't tell us what the show's about?
Yes. I was going to lie about it, but I'm not going to. As the title of the episode stated, we're covering The Cupcake Killer. The Cupcake Killer, which, spoiler, has little to do with cupcakes.
I'm very disappointed.
Me too. Kind
of assumed that.
I think it was really important that I say that from the. I mean, cupcakes are a part of the case.
Okay.
Don't get me wrong.
Good.
But when I hear The Cupcake Killer, I'm thinking that the cupcakes are an integral part of the story, and they're not.
Really?
No.
Someone just was like, yeah, there was a cupcake three doors down.
Okay. I will say they vaguely are important to the story later. But it's not like. When I first saw The Cupcake Killer, I assumed someone's poisoning people via cupcakes.
Via cupcakes.
That is not what the story is about.
I feel so misled.
I'm so sorry. No one has been poisoned.
I'm leaving.
Christina walked out of the studio. No, I literally, when I saw, we have a think tank of all of our ideas for the pod. And Christina wrote Cupcake Killer a few months back. And I was like, ooh, I'm interested in doing this. And then I kind of forgot about it. And then the other day when I was trying to figure out a new episode to do, I was researching all the thing. I was like, oh, I want to do something, not so recent. And Cupcake Killer came up. And I was like, oh, Cupcake Killer. I can't wait to see how they managed to poison all these people with the cupcakes. I'm like, I can't believe it. Our listeners are going to be like, oh, I never want to look at cupcakes the same. I'm like, oh, it's going to be a great t-shirt. Like, all my brains were like, there's so many things we could do with The Cupcake Killer. And it's not even about fucking work. So I guess I should say what it is about.
Yeah, sure.
Well, this is a really fun story. This is a fun story because the entire account of the story, there's not a lot of sources on it, but one officer wrote his entire account down. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. So our story begins on a crisp November night in 1942. It's a little past 1 o'clock in the morning. And patrolman Joseph Doyle is walking his usual beat along Jamaica Avenue in Queens. That's right, we're in Queens. As he's walking, he notices in the distance a flicker of light coming from the darkened churchyard up ahead. The church is the First Reformed Dutch Church of Jamaica on 153rd Street. As he continues, the light goes out. Moments later, it flickers back on. Then it goes out again. Doyle's throat begins to tighten as he silently starts to approach the church. As he's walking, he deduces, as he gets closer and he starts seeing the flame, it's not just a light, it seems like it's a match. Mm. It seems like a match is being lit and a match is going out. A match is being lit and then it's going out. At this early hour of the morning, whoever is striking matches was certainly up to no good, he says. His first thought is a burglar. Mm. Now, church burglaries were quite popular in the 40s and 50s. Heck, they've been popular for as long as churches have been around, right? Many churches don't have solid locks or security. Mm. If you go into a church, you have an array of options. You can either grab some pricey chalices, mm-hmm. some gold stuff, some really expensive actual precious metals, mm-hmm. or you can just cut to the chase and get your hands on the collection box,
right,
which usually isn't kept in any big, thick safe in this time. Nowadays, it is.
It is.
Either way, church and break-ins were not uncommon. And they're still uncommon. Our church in our neighborhood got broken into.
Which one?
Annunciation.
Really?
Church of the Annunciation got broken into, I think, a month ago. And they took one of the oldest chalices that exists in Brooklyn.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's a really old chalice they took. And it was really worth a lot of money. And they stole that.
I didn't hear about this.
Yeah. But so church robberies, they're not uncommon. They're still happening today. And so Doyle thinks that's what he's about to come upon. He's like, this is definitely a robbery. So let me do it. So he jumps the fence into the courtyard. And once again, the light has gone on and gone off again. So now he puts his hand over the holster of his revolver and points his flashlight into the churchyard. Mm-hmm. Now there's nothing but silence and no lights or anything.
To be fair, if you're trying to sneak up on a burglar, why would you turn your flashlight on in the churchyard before it kind of gives your position away. Like, it's a bad idea.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happens. All of a sudden, there's a sudden movement in the shadows, followed by the sounds of footsteps scurrying into the night.
What were you thinking, Officer Doyle?
He didn't think this one fast enough. So Doyle goes back to where he had first seen the flickers of light. And he approaches the church and sees that there's no windows broken. There's no doors jimmied open. Nothing seems out of the ordinary. Nothing. There's no indication that anyone has tried to break in at all. So he's confused. He can't figure out what this person scurried away was doing there. Why did he run away when he was doing nothing at all? So he continues to scan the yard to find something, anything. And then, well, he does. The beam of his flashlight lands on a gruesome sight. Lying face up on the ground was the body of an attractive, well-dressed young woman, her face frozen in a look of horror and surprise. Wrapped tightly around her neck was a green silk scarf, drenched in blood from several stab wounds to her throat. Mm. 10 minutes later, the churchyard is filled with policemen. Searchlights are set up, and the medical examiner gets there and starts inspecting the body. Among the officers there was Captain Henry Flattery. He's a veteran Queens investigator who was not buying the theory that this is a mugging gone bad. And the cops there were thinking that perhaps the mugging because the victim's purse was missing.
Okay.
So sure. That seems to indicate a robbery.
Right.
But he didn't buy it. It seems a little weird.
It seems a little weird that she's wandering alone in a churchyard.
Absolutely. They searched for more evidence, but the only other thing near the body was a broken box of cupcakes.
Oh, damn. This is how the cupcakes come in?
That the victim dropped as the killer squeezed the last breath out of her.
Are you kidding me? This is how the cupcakes... I know there are other more important things happening here, but this is how the cupcakes come in.
They were just kind of there. She had cupcakes with her that fell to the ground.
They could have called him the churchyard killer.
No, I know. There's so many other names. But instead, we went with cupcake color, which again...
makes him sound cute. Little cupcake.
I've got
you little cupcake killer. You little killer, you. You're a little cupcake killer.
Cupcake killer. Don't call your kid the cupcake killer, you guys. It's not an appropriate to call your kid. No. After his retirement, Captain Henry Flattery would write his account of this very story in a pulp magazine called Front Page Detective. Hmm. It was printed in November 1955 and was part of a collection of stories called Dumbbells I Have Known, which pokes fun at stupid criminals.
Incredible. I want a copy of this.
So the following account comes directly from his personal narration of the whole story, which was printed in Front Page Detective. I mean, the idea of like there's so many. We know how many dumb people have we covered on this show. Like, what
many?
I always think about the killers who put all the Italian OG papers.
That's exactly what I was thinking of.
to throw them off, like it's important that they know that some Italian did it. And what do Italians do? They read the OG. It's like favorite story.
That's exactly where my brain went.
It's like, how do we frame an Italian? Well, throw some provolone and an OG and hope for the best. Like the stupidest thing. It was so dumb. So I just appreciate like an officer after his years on the force being like, no. I need to document how dumb these people were.
Do you think this is what retired detectives do? They sit around and they drink whiskey and smoke a cigar and be like, no, I got one stupider than you. I got a stupider one than you.
And then guess what? I called the cupcake killer. But what did it have to do with cupcakes? Well, the cupcakes were there. But what did it have to do with the cupcakes? They were there. But did they kill her with the cupcake?
No.
So why is the cupcake killer? Because it's alliteration. Alliteration's nice. I'm not going to call him the graveyard killer. Some dummy probably thought about that years later. Oh, gosh. Flattery said that he listened to Officer Doyle's story. And as he's listening, it struck him that the killer must have lit the matches after the woman was dead. Why would he light matches to strangle someone, to stab someone? It makes no sense, right? He wouldn't. He didn't need extra light to strangle her or to cut her throat. And even if he did need extra light, it's insane to think that she just stood there while he tried lighting match after match. Right. Because Doyle said it was many matches.
Right.
So clearly the person was murdered before the whole matches of it all began. And Flattery deduced that the killer must have been lighting the matches in order to get himself some light to find something.
Right.
To look for something.
Perhaps.
It wasn't the cupcakes. Perhaps the cupcakes. This is all about the cupcakes, you guys. They just wanted the cupcakes. Give me them cupcakes now.
Just for whatever reason, this makes me think of back when we used to have New York One still. Pat Kiernan, there was like a cupcake ATM somewhere that opened. And I remember Pat Kiernan being just so angry at the thought of an ATM for cupcakes. It was very irrational. And that's what I keep thinking of during the Cupcake Killer. Anyway.
That's real. That's real. That's real. So Flattery deduced that the killer must have been looking for something. Perhaps he was looking for the purse if he was a mugger or something that was dropped.
Yeah.
He told his men to cover every inch of the yard. He said, quote, I'm looking for a calling card. But except for a single box of cupcakes, they found nothing near the body. There were also no signs of real struggle. The medical examiner made his report, and it read the following. She probably died a few minutes before Doyle spotted her. Strangled with a scarf. Those cuts are funny. Not one big one, but a whole series of little ones. As if the killer had used a small knife. And not a very sharp one at that. No matter. The scarf's what killed her.
Weird. So why would you... Why would he then need to cut her neck at all? Like, what is he going for with that? Like, what is the plan?
They don't know. Especially because, you know, the medical examiner says that she should have been dead.
She was dead.
Post-strangulation.
Was he trying to cover his tracks with, like, removing, not to have two decapitated bodies in 2 weeks in a row, but is that, like, the idea?
They're not sure. They're trying to figure that out.
Okay.
Why the stabbing to begin with? By 2 a.m., a crowd has gathered outside the churchyard, hoping to get a lead on the dead woman's identity. Flaherty asks them to line up, single file, and each have a look at her. Oof. Can you imagine? Everyone's gathering. They're like, all right, you know what? No, don't go anywhere. Line up. Everyone, take a good look at this dead body.
God.
Does anyone know this dead body?
Horrible.
Come look.
Also,
you're not close enough. Come look at this dead body.
How many people are wandering by this church at 2 a.m.?
Well, I mean, I think there's sirens. There's the floodlights have come. People are just like nosy. They're like, well, what's going on here?
Oh my gosh.
What's going on over there?
They did not know that they were going to have to view the victim.
Yeah, like I would be like, no.
No. Bye.
Hard pass. I do not need to see this. So each and every one of the people who are the looky-loos gathering around. They each go up to the body, but no one brings any results. No one can identify the body. Flaherty then heads back to his precinct. He begins going through a pile of missing persons reports. There was nothing matching the description of the victim. It seemed that the woman had been carrying a box of cupcakes. She might have a family. But if she had a family, why hadn't they reported her missing? More and more, as he tried piecing the case together, things just weren't adding up. The case didn't follow any pattern of a usual mugging. Muggers didn't use scarves.
Right.
If they wanted to choke someone or restrain someone, they used their forearms, their biceps. They would use their muscles to do it. And they certainly didn't hack away at their victims' throats with dull knives.
Yeah.
If you're looking to slash someone, your knife is not dull.
Right.
Plus, if you're a mugger, you're not interested in killing. You're interested in stealing.
Right.
If you're caught, that's real prison time. Stealing a purse is not worth the prison time you'll face for murdering someone. Now, yes, sure. Muggings go bad. We know that.
Yeah.
We've had that in these stories. So if a mugger needed to, perhaps, sure, they would kill. But not how this lady is killed. They kill if they have to, but they wouldn't stop to cut someone's throat after they'd gotten what they wanted out of the strangling.
That's the weirdest part.
It just makes no sense. So with all this being said, Flaherty deduced that this isn't a mugging gone wrong. It's a murder gone right. The killer looked like they had planned on murdering the girl, then tried to cover up by making it look like a mugging. Flaherty wrote, quote, if that was so, whatever the killer was looking for in the darkness must have belonged to him and must be important to us.
The cupcakes.
not looking for the
cupcakes. He was carrying the cupcakes.
He's not looking for the cupcakes. I'm so sorry to tell you. Okay, back to the scene of the crime. Are there drag marks? No. Hmm. Is there blood splattered across any other pieces of it? No. Hmm. Is there any resemblance of someone being taken to that churchyard by force? No. But from what the coroner, the medical examiner states, that murder happened in that yard. Mm. They are most certainly of it. So that means that girl who was murdered entered the churchyard with willingly, the killer yeah. willingly, meaning she knew him. So it's now 4:30 the same morning, and a patrolman finds the victim's purse 5 blocks from the churchyard. It matched her outfit. Mm. Okay, sorry. I'm sorry. It matched her outfit is my favorite bit of this, because that means that the police were like, oh, this will go well with what she's wearing. She was wearing that nice dress. This goes with a nice dress.
That's gotta be hers.
That's gotta be it.
That's gotta be hers.
Yo, Sarge, this gotta be it, right?
Look how well it compliments the dress.
Look how well it compliments. The buckling is darling, I tell you. It looks just like, it goes with the shoes and everything. I just like that detail.
I love this vision.
It's my favorite part of the story is that they like, oh, this clearly goes with what she's wearing.
Right.
It's like, good on them.
Yeah.
Style's not lost on the cisgendered straight men. The purse also contained identification papers and a communication ticket to Freeport, Long Island. The name on the papers was Carol Dugan. A name? This is progress. The NYPD then showed...
What's up, Dugan's in my family? This has nothing to do with anything. I'm just kind of wondering.
The NYPD then phoned Nassau County Police and outlined the crime and asked for a check on Carol Dugan of Freeport. Now, while this is all going on, there's another break in the case. Mind you, this is all the same night. NYPD is working like we have all done right. cases where there's foolery.
Up.
And this is happening like clockwork. They've been looking for a calling card, right? Like Flaherty's like, do not leave until you figure out what this calling card is. And so they're looking for the calling card. Flaherty's adamant about finding it. And they find it. In the churchyard, detectives find a small bone-handled knife. And it still had blood on it.
Ooh.
By morning, the NYPD had a victim, 2 weapons in the knife and the scarf, and a full report on the victim. Her name was Carol Dugan Tuttle. She worked not too far from the church at a restaurant. Flaherty and a team of detectives followed the address and paid an early morning visit to the Tuttle household, where the husband was saddened but hardly surprised at the news. This obviously confused detectives.
Yeah.
He's
Why
really
is he not surprised?
He's genuinely upset, but also not shocked that she was A, missing, or B, murdered. So they pressed on, and they had him come into the station for further questioning, and he does freely. They then ask why he hadn't notified the police when his wife didn't get home by, say, midnight. Her husband, Harry, says, quote, "She stayed out late pretty often. I thought she'd missed the last train. I had to put the kids to bed, then I went to bed myself." His alibi for where he was that evening checked out. The kids were there. The kids also said, you know, were able to like account the entirety of the night. That was all correct. It's worth noting.
It's worth noting.
The kids were from Carol's first marriage, not Harry's.
Okay.
Harry explained that Carol had worked as a waitress at a Jamaica Avenue restaurant and often stayed out late having, quote, drinks with the girls. This behavior was quite normal. That drinks with the girls is in quotes because Carol was a little bit doing more than having drinks with the girls and not always with
the girls.
Flaherty asks, did you know of anyone who might want to kill her? Harry responds, yes.
Oof.
That is, someone tried to kill her a couple of weeks ago.
What?
She came home about 6 in the morning, all beat up and cut. She said a sailor named Wright John or Joe Wright, who used to work at her place, had done it. She promised me she wouldn't fool around anymore.
Oh, dear. Wouldn't you report that to the police?
I think you should. I think you should report that to the police, but they did not.
Okay.
Just hours after the murder, police had a strong suspect, and now a likely motive. Quote, already a woman beater, Wright must have flown off the handle completely when Carol gave the seething swabble the heave-ho, said the New York Daily News.
That is such a Daily News line.
It's worth noting.
It's worth noting.
That I subscribed to the New York Daily News because I needed to access this article.
Yes.
And so they had a discount for Black Friday that was only $6 for the full year. So
now Damn!
So now I have a New York Daily News subscription for a year for $6.
Oh, that's brilliant.
But literally that $6 just went so I was, I feel, so I have access to this quote.
Yeah.
When Carol gave the seething swabby the heave-ho.
Yes, 100%. Worth every penny of that $6.
Worth every penny. Meanwhile, another team of detectives traced Tuttle's last hours to a bar a couple blocks away from where she was found. The bar was called Ye Old Corner Tavern. She had been there the evening before, drinking with a man the bartender knew only as Jim. The bartender that night was also the owner. Her name was Louise Brem. She remembered the box of cupcakes. So the box of cupcakes.
The box of cupcakes.
Did come in to help the case, knowing that, yes, I know this person. I remember cupcakes at the bar.
I wanted cupcakes. She wouldn't let me have the cupcakes.
So the investigators ask Louise, was Jim a sailor? No, a civilian. A check of the location where Carol had worked turned up a youngster who had known Jim pretty well. This youngster says his name is James Mallon. Used to work here. He and Carol were sweet on each other. Do you know a John or Joe Wright? No.
Where did Harry get this name?
By now, Flaherty was convinced that the killer had tried to throw them a curveball by making the murderer look like a mugging. The question, however, that remained was, which of Carol Tuttle's after-hours friends, Mallon or Wright, was their man?
Hmm.
And we're going to figure that out when we come back from our break. The New York Mystery Machine is brought to you in part by listeners like you.
That's right. Head on over to our Patreon, and for as little as $3 a month, you can help keep the pod growing.
By joining, you can access a whole bunch of cool stuff, such as mini episodes, swag, exclusive playlists, and more.
Head to www.patreon.com/NYMysteryMachine to find out more and become a patron.
That's www.patreon.com/NYMysteryMachine and join our ever-growing community today.
So you listen to our podcast, which means you must love mysteries.
But how would you like to solve your very own mystery?
Hunt a Killer is an immersive murder mystery game told over the course of 6-episode boxes. Each box is filled with different clues and physical items such as autopsy reports, witness statements, and more. You'll use these clues to solve an ongoing murder mystery.
Work solo or as a team of sleuths to finally crack the case and reveal the murderer.
So do you think you have what it takes to hunt a killer? If so, head to www.huntakiller.com and use the code NYMysteryMachine for 20% off the first box.
That's www.huntakiller.com and the code is NYMysteryMachine.
Sign up now and begin the hunt.
Bow, bow, bow. We are back, and Carol Dugan Tuttle has been found murdered in a churchyard.
Yep.
There is no, seems to be no dragging or any signs of trying to get away.
Mm-hmm.
We've deduced that Carol knew her murderer.
Yeah.
And we've narrowed it down to two people, someone named Mallon and someone named Wright.
I'm not going to lie, I still haven't fully written off Harry.
Harry's been written off.
All right, I'm just saying.
Feel
the
free.
The kids were in bed.
Everyone.
They were asleep.
Everyone, feel free to write off Harry.
Fine.
I can let you know, honestly and soundly, Harry. It was not Harry.
Okay.
You always like hold on to like the husband. Every time. Every husband. Like, I swear to God, like, poor Ed. I like. Like, you're going to be like, oh, I guess, Ed, like, if you die, you're going to write a note someplace that I have to find. And you're like, it was probably Ed. It was always the husband.
Clearly in Switzerland at the time.
I don't buy it.
I don't know.
I don't buy it. So the NYPD tries Malin first. He is a tall, raw-boned young man who seemed genuinely shocked when he was told that Carol was dead. But I was with her last night, he exclaims. Yes, we know. Let's hear about it.
That's why we're here.
Well, we went to this tavern where we always used to meet. We had a few drinks and talked. About midnight or a little after, we left. Carol went to the railroad station and I came home. You didn't walk through the churchyard with her? No. Do you know a sailor named Wright? No. What about Carol's husband? Do you know him? Now. Madeline looks even more shocked at this point. Mm. What do you mean, Carol's husband? She's not married. She's going to marry me.
Oh.
At this, they take Madeline to the police station, and they begin checking Carol's friends in Freeport. The first one, a girlfriend, remembered the time Carol had been beaten, she says. She came to my house before... she's from Long Island.
Oh, right, yes.
She came to my house before she went home that night. She said she was afraid to let her husband see her like that. I persuaded her it was best to face the music, so she went home. Did she tell you who did it? She didn't have to. I knew this Jim Malin she goes with. He has a terrible temper. What about a sailor, right? The woman shook her head. I don't know any sailor. Accent work is on point, you guys.
On point. On point.
They went to work on Malin. Continuing questions, trying to figure out what the situation is and get more information, literally as much information as they can physically get. Mm-hmm. But Malin insisted that he had left Carol shortly after midnight, that he had never known that she had a husband nor three children from a previous marriage.
All right.
But then came the big break. When they were looking through Carol's things, they found a letter. The letter was from Malin, and it read the following, quote, I know you are thinking of the children, but you don't owe Harry anything.
Oh.
It was pretty clear now. Afraid to tell her husband about Malin, Carol had invented the sailor named Wright, someone Harry could never check up on because he didn't exist. Flaherty wrote, quote, as for Malin, he was acting the injured innocent because if he could convince us that he didn't know about Carol's husband, he would have no motive for killing her. The letter made a liar out of him and a killer as well. He had beaten Carol up because she wouldn't leave her husband for him, and he had murdered her for the same reason. Flaherty called in witness after witness after witness, showing them the knife that they found in the churchyard and asking every single person with any connection to Malin if they recognized it. Every one of them who knew Malin clearly were able to say and identify it as one that he carried on his keychain. It all seemed to result in one story. Malin was in the churchyard that evening, and he was looking for his knife that he was unable to retrieve. He lit match after match to no avail, and then when he heard Officer Doyle approaching, seeing the flashlight coming his way, he had no choice but to abandon it and run as fast as he could. Malin lied and was caught dead to rights. Kind of insane.
Really is.
My favorite part is literally this, you know, the concoction of the sailor.
Truly. Truly. And the guy just playing completely dumb about...
I mean, that's the right choice, that right? Was a, like,
no,
you make, that's,
excellent choice.
That's the correct decision. Like, however, if you are guilty...
You should also kind of think about maybe the letter that you wrote that time that you probably might still have in her possession.
Yeah. Unfortunate.
So, was he just cutting her neck for vengeance purposes? Is that what we've decided?
Well, Malin finally confesses to Carol Tuttle's murder. He admitted he wanted to kill her because she was through with him. He said, quote, "She double-crossed me, and I wanted to pay her back." They argued after leaving the bar, and Malin, consumed by a blinding rage fueled by countless beers, strangled her with her scarf before slashing at her neck with a little knife. He dropped the knife and searched for it by matchlight until he had to abandon it. It had taken Flaherty and his squad less than 24 hours to crack the case.
Damn.
Yeah, it seems that he just was angry.
Yeah, gosh.
I think, honestly, he slashed at her just out of continuing rage. It seems like there was he doesn't give any real reason why he strangled her and killed her. Perhaps he thought she wasn't dead, or he was just angry and he just wanted to continue to, I don't know, who knows? There's no real reason why he chooses that way of doing it.
That's awful. For all of our joking, this is
terrible. I mean, you guys know at this point in the game, we get through these episodes by making a lot of jokes because if we didn't, we'd be a very different podcast and be a very different tone all the time because we rarely talk about happy things.
Very rarely. Almost never.
Malin was spared the electric chair when he was convicted of second-degree murder a few months later and given a 20-years-to-life sentence at Sing Sing.
Gotta sing, sing!
I've used that reference so many times. I think I've never actually said where it's from. You guys, it's from The Producers. It's from the musical The Producers. When Bialystok and Bloom get sentenced to prison, they are sent to Sing Sing, and the inmates sing the song, Gotta Sing Sing.
Right.
And now you know. Flaherty wrote the following, quote, "He, Malin, had gotten every break a killer could ask for, a phony suspect, a misleading motive, and a chance to get away unseen. But he had stacked the cards too high against himself. He had killed in haste. He got plenty of opportunity to repent at leisure." And that, Christina, is the cupcake killer.
Shockingly few cupcakes.
Just a small box of cupcakes that had nothing to do with the case, except for the fact that they were able to connect that she was
back
at that
to the bar.
Like that was the guarantee, being like, oh, she had a box of cupcakes, but did not use a cupcake to kill. It was a very normal
cupcake. To this day, no one knows what kind of cupcakes were in that box.
I'm going to make a t-shirt that says, this is a normal cupcake. This cupcake has nothing to do with murder. That's the t-shirt. That's a t-shirt, you guys. It's a cupcake that says, this cupcake has nothing to do with murder.
It's a little cartoon cupcake. No murder here.
No murder here. It's like a happy cupcake.
It's a happy little cartoon cupcake.
Stay tuned in 2024. That's going to be a release in 2024. Part of our new line at the new shop. I'm going to make that cupcake t-shirt because I'd wear that t-shirt. Because people would be like, that's a weird t-shirt.
That's so weird.
Like most of our t-shirts. People are like, that's a weird t-shirt.
Yeah.
Like for the few of you who bought the Veiled Murderess t-shirt, I'm sure people are like, what is that weird t-shirt you're wearing? And now that's how you explain it.
I'd love to know what that explains. It's this really weird podcast. It doesn't say anything about a podcast. Are they called a Veiled Murderess? No.
There's no.
Disappear people? No.
There's no name of the podcast anywhere on this merchandise.
So what does this have to do with the podcast? It's just...
I don't know.
Joke they made.
These two are weird. They make weird references, and then they think they're clever, and they put them on t-shirts and hope that we buy them. And then we do, so I guess it's work. I guess it worked out for them. I guess they figured it out. If you have any more thoughts on the Cupcake Killer, or a better name that he could have been called rather than the Cupcake Killer, it's worth noting, third time.
It's worth noting.
That the Cupcake Killer was, that name was given by Flaherty, who called him the Cupcake Killer in his article that I wrote in that Pulp Mag. So he named it, which I believe he deserves to name it as well.
That's fair.
His team and him is the one who figured out.
24 hours? Yeah,
we have you guys who have listened to the show over the last 3 years, 2.5 years, whatever the case may be. You guys know how many times we've been so angry with the NYPD who have not been able to like solve cases.
Yeah.
And this team did it in 24 hours.
It's pretty good. Pretty good.
Well, you guys, if you have any thoughts, and or you just want to like show some love, head over to at NY Mystery Machine on Instagram, Facebook, or TikTok, at NY Mysteries on X. You can email us at nymysterymachine@gmail.com. The best way to support us is heading over to our Patreon, patreon.com/NY Mystery Machine. You can buy a t-shirt below the collar.com/NY Mystery Machine, or you can head over to Apple Podcasts and write us a review. Give us 5 stars. Tell us what you love about the show. Tell people to listen to us.
We love that.
Head over to Spotify. Give us 5 stars on Spotify. And we know it's coming up. Spotify Wrapped is coming up. If you've been listening to us on the Wrapped, screenshot that we're one of your top shows, and we'll post it on our socials. We love that. You could also leave us reviews on Audible if you listen there, or some other places. There's other anywhere you listen to, you could probably rate us and review us. So head on over and do that. All that really it matters. It helps. It counts. And be sure to follow the show, like the show, subscribe to the show, and all those all things you can do. We're back next week. We're all new for another few weeks before we take our Christmas break. So we are back with some fun episodes down the line. I've been Adam Ace.
I've been Christina Martinelli.
And thank you ever so much for taking a ride on the New York Mystery Machine.
Town Hall, but for ghosts.